listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a returning guest who last time was dressed like a vampire because she was the hostess for a horror film festival. And now we're bringing her back because she's a great singer-songwriter, Miss Christine Hanlon. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. How are you?
Good. I just saw you on Sunday for our Songwriters in the Round night. You killed it. You slayed the dragon. It was amazing.
Thank you. It was a good feeling, and I appreciate you very much.
No worries. I appreciate you, too. And you know what? Your guitar was super cool. We don't have a picture of it, but your guitar was like a light blue, and I didn't realize it had a Stratocaster neck, which is such a cool... I've never seen that on an acoustic. Tell me a little bit about that guitar, because we talked a little bit about it in the green room, but...
Sure. It's a Fender Sonarin. It's a California series in Lake Placid Blue. I've had it, I don't know, almost 20 years now, probably 15 or 20 years. I don't remember. But it was a cool thing. I got it at Steve's Music in Toronto on Queen Street. I'm from Toronto originally. And the guy who sold it to me told me all the specs. And then it was just really rad. It has a Stratocaster neck and the cutaway so you can do some soloing. I'm not a shredder.
Give it time.
But the neck is nice. It's nice and round, and like you get a good grip as if you're playing an electric guitar. It's super light, but like that's really cool. Warm. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Toronto, I think the only place I've played in Toronto is the Horseshoe Tavern, which is like
nice.
One of the well-known spots over there, right?
Yeah, Steve's Music is directly across the street.
Oh, that's crazy. Really?
Yeah. So if you break a string or, you know, need a drumstick, like they're open usually kind of late. I don't even know. I think they're still there. I don't know. I haven't lived in Toronto in 10 years, so. But
tell me a little bit about the music scene. Did you ever perform in Toronto? Like, what was that music scene like?
It was really cool. Yeah, it was rad. I performed a lot. I had almost a residency. It was just like a 3-month block at a place called the Cameron House. And it's it's one of the oldest bars in Toronto. And it just, there was this back area that you had to get through a curtain. You walk through like the main bar and then you go through this like curtain with a really narrow entryway. And then there's just this stage and with seating, and it's just, you feel like you're kind of in a speakeasy, and it was just a really welcoming environment. I had a lot of singer songwriter friends now that, you know, are pretty well known in the industry in both Toronto and the US, and it was a big family. I walked to my gigs because I lived downtown. Awesome. At the time.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was rad. So I played there. I mean, I had my first residency at a place called On the Rocks. I was in Etobicoke and Toronto, Royal York and Bloor area. Anybody who's from Toronto knows that area. But that was a residency given to me by the owners, and they really believed in me. I think it was like 20, maybe. I don't know. But every Tuesday night, and we packed the house, and I played Alice in Chains covers. And it was rad. Me and my friend Alex. It was awesome.
Well, what's really cool too about the Canadian music scene, a lot of people don't know this, it's like very derivative of the American music scene, but then it kind of also like promotes a lot of Canadian artists. Tell me a little bit about how that market works. Like, is there an advantage, obviously, being Canadian and, you know, being a Canadian artist there? Because they're very good about promoting Canadian artists too.
Absolutely. And I was stupid enough to move to the States a little too soon into my career because I didn't really get to reap the benefits of that. It's mandatory for Canadian radio to play, I believe it's 30% Canadian content.
Wow.
So you get spins and it's just rad because it's so supportive, and the Canadian broadcasting Corporation is just really great with their artists, because it is part of the law. You must play Canadian content.
That's cool.
So it's saturated with Canadian content, but I love it. It's weird. I always feel like when I show people music that I grew up with out here in the States, I'm like, you guys have probably never heard this before. And I play it like, what? You've never heard it. And some people who are really, you know, big on music have heard bands like Tea Party and Big Wreck and Sloan, right. You know, like they played all the college circuits and Tragically Hip and stuff like that. But then there's just stuff that played on the radio that you really don't hear, but they were huge and they had a huge influence even in American music. And anybody who has connections in both the Toronto and LA scene, they've played with these people. And that's kind of what put me out here, was just my connections were so tight knit to LA. I only knew 4 people in LA when I decided to come out here, and I knew them all separately. I met them all different occasions in Toronto, and then upon coming out here, they all knew each other.
That's crazy.
Well, like I toured with them, and are like, I was the best man at this guy's wedding. I've known him for 30 years. Like, how the hell?
Crazy. That's
kind of how I knew it was like LA was a place for me. It really felt like home.
Right. And there's a lot of parallels between Toronto and LA. That's what I like about it too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of film there too. There's a lot of music. There's like a very central downtown that kind of has music venues, music shops. So there's a lot of things that parallel LA in that regard.
For sure. Yeah. It's easy to settle into, and the economy is very similar. It's kind of expensive to live both places. So. Right. Might as well live by the ocean, right?
That's right. We got better weather, baby. So let me ask you, what was the moment of Zen that made you fall in love with music and made you want to become a singer?
Oh, God.
Or mother playing a song as a kid? Was it
pop
star?
I was an obnoxious child. I loved attention. I loved the movie Dirty Dancing because my mom loved it. She was obsessed with Patrick Swayze. Hi, Mom. And she used to, I know it sounds weird now, but I mean, in the 80s, I guess it was perfectly normal. She used to let her little, you know, 4-year-old, 5-year-old daughter dirty dance in the living room to all her friends and family. Like, look what Chrissy can do. And then like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just having a great time. And then I discovered singing through my sister, who was in a really great choir. But even before that, even when we were younger, I guess what really got me into like rock and roll was Aerosmith. But I was sitting in front of the television. Yeah, I was sitting in front of the, and my brother's a huge influence on me too. He's a guitar player, and he lived in the basement, and he had like crazy long hair. People used to say he looked like Dave Mustaine, and he's metalhead, Pantera, you know, and like there were pictures of Megadeth and everything, and like all the demons and stuff. So I thought he was the devil, like, and he was in the basement. So it was like, it was always just music in the house. My mom sings, and it was just, anyways. So we're watching TV one night, and I'm watching this TV show on City TV called Fashion Television, and it was, really ahead of its time. It used to follow like Toronto Fashion Week, Paris Fashion Week, everything like that. And so one of the models was walking to a song. It happens to be a cover, but it was by Aerosmith. Remember walking in the sand, remember. Yeah. And I was like, what is this? Right. And my brother's like, oh, I think that's Aerosmith. And he goes down to the basement. He comes back up from the basement with a pile of cassette tapes, and he just like plops them down. And he's like, yeah, it's on one of these. So I'm like, okay, I rush up to my room. I listen to every single tape. It was the last song on the last side of the last tape that I had.
I got to get this.
By then I was a huge fan, and it took me hours. And what was I? I was like in grade 1 or 2. So like I had all the time in the world to listen to 12 Aerosmith cassette tapes back to front and back to front.
Right.
and I was hooked. And so, yeah, I guess that's kind of what gave me like my
passion. Did you ever do the pencil in the tape?
Oh, yeah.
That's like people don't know about that.
Kids nowadays, they have no idea when the tape player, you know, when it eats your tape. And then also splicing, you could splice, like, so if you record off the radio,
yeah,
and then if you get really good, you can cut your own tape and then tape it together.
I never did that. Wow.
Did you ever did you ever stuff your cassette tapes at the top to make them recordable? So if, let's say you get like, oh my God. So my mom and dad had a bunch of terrible country music tapes and we hated them all, right? And we just wanted to, and we were always running out of blank tapes.
Right.
Because we'd love to record off the radio, or like our friend would give us a CD and we would record it or whatever, right? Or you dub it in a double cassette player. Yeah. Oh man, this is a long time ago. It feels like it really is a lifetime ago. And so my sister taught me this trick. You get little pieces of tissue, like toilet paper, or you can use scotch tape, but you stuff the two little holes at the top of the cassette tape.
Right.
And you can record over a store-bought album. What?
I've never heard of this. This is so crazy.
And if you don't want to record over a tape that you've made yourself, you pop those tabs out.
Wow. I've never known this. This is so... This is pretty novel, because like I thought I knew all the little tricks with all the tape and like, you know, winding it up and also like recording, like so you didn't miss, you like missed the commercial and the intro, but you got the song right out there. But yeah, you're teaching me new tricks. That's pretty
awesome. I'm telling you, it's hood stuff.
But you know what's cool is like tapes are coming back. Like people are buying tapes for records. Yeah. And I'm like, this is crazy. Why are you buying tapes? Like there's better quality of other stuff. They're like, oh, it's just so hip. It's like a collector's item. I'm like, this is a collector's item now? It's so bizarre. It's very, very weird.
I think I have my whole cassette collection still at my parents' house. And I think they still have theirs. I think they still have their 8-tracks. Like, I don't know. The records got...
Impressive.
They stored them by the furnace, which was kind of dumb, the records. So they all kind of, like, warped and got tossed. There were, like, some original cuts of, like, The Grateful Dead and stuff. My mom was really cool. My mom was cool when she was a kid. And, those are different stories. That was the 60s. But anyways... Gone. Melted.
So did you end up getting into a chorus? Did you end up getting into like High School Musicals? Like how did you start developing your voice?
Yeah. So my sister's 7 years older than me, and she used to practice what her choir teacher would practice on me. So like growing up, you know, I had a really great choir teacher, Miss Grande Nacarado. And I was really bummed out when I moved elementary schools, but then I was so happy because she taught music at both the schools, and that was like awesome. And yeah, I was always given the solos. It was a Catholic school, so I was given like solos, and you get to sing the national anthem on the morning announcements. That's and cool. I was always writing silly little songs and performing and being obnoxious, as I probably still am. And they, but my sister, yeah, being in high school, by the time I was, I don't know, what was this, 94. So I don't know. I was in grade 4 or 5. She was in high school, and she had a great, great choir program. Like fantastic.
In a high school or something?
In a high school. They used to compete, and like we competed too on an elementary school level. Like our teachers were serious about music in band and in vocal. That's but my sister would actually like, and my sister took classical piano and stuff. So like I opted out for like girl guides and swimming lessons, and I didn't discover my musical talent. Like it was always something that I was very natural at. And that I just wanted to do something completely opposite from what my brother and sister were doing. My brother was taking guitar lessons. My sister was taking piano lessons, and I was like trying to be an athlete, but I'm not coordinated. So she would teach me. So I was young, like, and she would just teach me scales and about classical music, a little bit into opera. And then I had a neighbor that moved across the street, and she was active in like Broadway musicals and stuff in Toronto, and a little bit of competition grew between us. And then her and I became, as we grew up, like into our 20s, that residency that I had, she would come and do my harmonies and stuff. And like, she's really active in the Toronto scene too. So we just like, I think it's just in me, and my parents were always super supportive. They let us do whatever the hell we wanted. So it was never like a pipe dream, but it was also kind of like, I don't know. I wish I took my dad's advice in that kitchen when he's like, well, why don't you go to school? I was 18. And I'm like, what am I going to go to school for? He's like, music. I'm like, what are you going to teach me how to be a rock star? And like now I'm like, actually, I could have taken like one of the best jazz programs in Toronto at Humber and like known what I'm doing. I find it. But then my friends who took those classes are now seeing me in LA, and they're like, oh man, that's so cool. I'm like, no, what you're doing is way cooler.
Well, and it's also like sometimes what you study, you don't love, you know what I mean? So there's always that. Cause I actually started in classical music. So I studied opera for years. That was my major in college. Wow. And like, I was way into it when I was studying it. And then as I was studying it, I was like, I don't love this as much as rock and roll. I would go back to my dorm and there'd be an 8-piece funk band in my living room because I live with all jazz musicians. And I was like, this is way more fun to be around. Like, why am I doing this where it's so stuffy? And then, you know, you come home and everybody's like partying and listening to a funk band and like everybody's having a good time. Like, this feels great. Like, this is where it's at. So I think you made the right decision just being in the environment. But before you did that, you did Canadian Idol, and you talked about that real briefly at our show on Sunday. But tell me what that experience was like, because that's something that is special and not everybody goes through that rite of passage. Tell me what that was like for you.
Yeah, I think I appreciate it now in my older age than I did at the time. I was very anti the man, anti system. I was like, yeah, I'm cool. And I didn't want to be on a TV show, but it was the first time in any of the Idol franchises. So there's like Aussie Idol, you know, like all the idols, that they allowed the performers to audition accompanying themselves with their own instruments. All right. They could audition with a keyboard or a guitar. And I did neither, but I thought that was rad because I'm like, okay, actual musicians are going to show up. Right. And so I did it and stood in line and on a freezing cold day in January outside in Toronto, let's just put thousands of singers outside minus degree weather in Toronto and see who lasts. Right. And so, you know, you're going through the producers, right? You're just like, you're filtered and you do, but like, I don't know, 5 or 6 auditions that day. And then you're given a golden ticket to go to Toronto. And I'm like, I'm already here. This is great. Right. And then they like launch you into the 200s, the top 200, which takes place in Toronto. And it's like a week long of just these, like, those are the televised auditions that you see, right? Wow. Like when they're on the stage in front and you're getting critiqued and stuff. And I was 21. I had never really, at that point I had my residency and I'd never really, performed competitively. I was just a raw talent. I didn't know how to use my voice. I lost my voice a lot because I didn't know how to sing. I could sing, but I would like cough up blood and stuff. Like, I'd really go for it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not comfortable. But anyways, I made it. The judges loved me. I psyched myself out. I made it to the top 22 overall, top 11 females. So I was in the first television voting round. I made it to the top, I don't know, 20 with Bohemian Rhapsody. And then we did like the groups and stuff like that. Da, 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 da. And then I performed a Sarah McLachlan song. But it was part of the plot too. They like worked it into the plot. I got really sick because I was just, and how they do it, they like deprive you of sleep. They deprive you of food, basically. They're kind of giving you like a crash course on the industry. Like, you got to perform under pressure. And I really respect it for that reason. I was up against some people that were amateur like me, a lot of them, but some of them went to like art school or like they already had some kind of background in like discipline. And I was just a singer. So I lost my voice and it was all in my head. Cause as soon as I got voted off, my voice came back kind of miraculously. It was crazy.
Well, you were probably responding to like all of the media and hysteria that all of that comes with.
It was just a lot. Yeah. Like I just hadn't, I was nervous.
Right.
I was nervous and there was a lot of pressure on me because the judges let me know that I was going to be in the top 10 before I was even finished through the top 100. They're like, and I didn't even make it there. And I don't know, I don't want to toot my own horn or whatever, but like there's a lot of contracts involved and there's like a lot of like politics, and past a certain point, the producers of the show have a little bit more power, but like at a certain point it's up to the country, right? And I just hadn't made it there and I wasn't ready.
Like I've heard like the producers know who they kind of want to groom and chiming in like, yeah, we like this artist. So
I was mouthy. I didn't want to fall into like their plot. They wanted to really hone in on the fact that I was sick. And I was like, and I'm not dogging Canadian Idol. Now that I'm older, I appreciate that experience. I should have shut up and just sang and let them write whatever plot, because it is a television show. We were called the cast.
Right.
But No, I was proud of where I came from. I came from like a really like working class neighborhood. I come from Rexdale, and you know, I wanted to talk about that, not about the fact that I was sick and I lost my voice. I'm like, whatever. They can watch episode 3 to find that out. Like, I don't need to perpetuate that. I want to like represent, right? Because like making it out of that neighborhood and not even, I know it sounds weird making it out, but like it's, you're proud of where you come from regardless. And I'm proud of where I come from. And I really wanted to like hone in on that. And I just made the writers change a bunch of stuff on the fly. And I just, you know, maybe I don't know. I didn't play the game very well. And looking back, there's some decisions that I made. I had a radio contract with this Euro dance pop group that we didn't sign because we wanted to be cool rock stars. And then I moved to LA a few months later. And like, thinking back now, you know?
You're like, I should have questioned on that. Well, yeah, but you know what? It's like you were an artist too. So like,
yeah,
artists are not going to be put in these like paradigms where it's like, you should be doing this. It's like, no, you want to break free from that. It's like, most artists don't do that. And that's why you're an artist. You know what I mean? So it makes sense.
And I think too, like if I had done that, you know, you and I wouldn't be sitting here right now talking. Right. Like you never know. Or maybe we would be, right? Like fate is funny like that. There's different paths to your destiny and whatever. But Canadian Idol was great. And I was on the same year as Carly Rae Jepsen. She made it to number 3. And she's definitely the most famous of us all.
That's crazy. And who are the judges, out of curiosity? Who are the judges?
Oh, God. Sash Jordan.
Okay.
Do you know Sash Jordan?
Oh,
I will make you a believer. She's like this powerhouse singer from the
90s. Oh, I don't know who she is. That's crazy.
She's Canadian. Okay. She did a lot of work with like Van Halen and stuff at Aerosmith. She used to tour with them and stuff. Zach something. Okay. He was like an entertainment lawyer. His claim to fame was
how did that guy become a judge? That's crazy.
Well, his band opened up for like Alice in Chains in the 80s or something ridiculous like that. And then Jake Gold, who was tragically Hip's manager, discovered them and who manages a lot of my friends now, and he and I are still in contact. And he and Sass like really believed in me.
Right.
Which was awesome. And then Farley Flex, does that make sense?
No.
He's like in like the urban hip hop, Canadian hip hop industry. I think he had something to do with like Maestro and stuff like that. Like, so they're just like, just, you know, industry professionals in Canada. And all my Canadian friends who actually know the truth or whatever I'm talking about, I might be completely wrong about their backgrounds, at least Farley Flex, but I don't know. They're pros. And the season, the show lasted 6 seasons. So the season after mine, they canceled it. There was not enough money in the broadcasting budget because at the time they launched So You Think You Can Dance Canada.
Wow.
And they couldn't do both. See, that's the thing. Canadian broadcasting, there's not a lot of funding.
So they don't do advertisements? That's not how they're funding the...
They do, but it's like one or the other. Like it's not like the States. It's a much smaller market, and it's a much, yeah, I guess like, I don't know. It's not as commercial. They couldn't afford both.
Maybe it's because all the Canadians are ice fishing and they're not watching.
Yeah, we're clubbing seals. Yeah, totally.
So you moved to LA and you had a management deal that I guess was spawned by the show, I assume?
No.
Related.
I don't know. I met my contacts in LA through work in retail in Yorkville. I worked for Diesel and I helped a bunch of rock stars. And made some really cool connections to move out to LA. Plus, a lot of my friends were kind of dipping their toes at the time, too. And I was like 25, 26. So I was going back and forth, was still living with my parents. Well, I had lived downtown for a long time. And then when I realized I wanted to go back and forth, I moved back in with my parents. So I didn't have to pay rent.
Smart. That happens.
And then I was just going back and forth from LA a bunch. And it was on my 6-month kind of stint out here for the first time when I like really decided I'm going to like on my Canadian visa, I'm going to just move here for 6 months, work illegally, like under the table for cash or whatever. And I got discovered because I'm really well connected and I got a lot of friends. I'm not going to name drop, but you know, a lot of my friends, you're well connected too. And it was just at some random party. We just started talking about Aerosmith. My old manager, Eric, he might even be watching right now. And he was the music director at The Sound at the time. And I signed a management contract. He hooked me up with a lot of songwriters and stuff. And then I made some other choices and like kind of let that fall by the wayside. And here we are. 12 years later.
Well, easy. This city is like, come over here. Oh yeah, come over here. And it's like so easy to listen to those voices and kind of be pulled in all these different directions. It's almost harder to kind of like say, no, I want to do this and nothing but this and not be swayed. I mean, I've been chirped at with all kinds of enticing opportunities that I've had to just be like, no, I don't want any of that, because what I really want is just to be true to myself. But this city, especially if you're not from here, man, it is just bad about that. You're going to have managers, entertainers, entertainment people, industry folk.
Yeah.
People for shit sometimes, people that are legit sometimes, like they're all you in different directions. So it's normal.
You know? Yeah. Like, you know, it's the difference between following your heart or following your gut. And I guess I followed my heart when my gut was telling me to go the other way. I chose comfort over discomfort, and inevitably I became very uncomfortable, which forced me to change, and you know, here I am.
Well, and you were playing guitar this whole time and writing songs.
Yeah,
like that's what's cool. It's like you still kept with it. And what was surprising is I was like, hey, do you have original songs? You're like, yeah, I got original songs. I'm like, can you play them and accompany yourself? You're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, you're booked. And then you slayed it on Sunday. You played so many cool songs, and I was like, you should be doing this all the time. Like, this is crazy. Like, you should be performing and being a songwriter that, you know, you kind of always kind of wanted to be here, you know? It's like,
yeah. And I think I just have such a broad range to my ability that, like, moving out here to LA, so in Toronto, there's a great scene, and I'm not knocking LA, but it's so big and spread out, and like, it's hard to get people out to shows, and like, everybody's from somewhere else. And in Toronto, I mean, there might be a person from Winnipeg or Calgary or whatever that like moves there to pursue their dream, but pretty much locals, and you get a lot of people coming out, and there's a scene, and it's, and you know, you're like a bigger fish in a smaller pond. Right. And then moving out here, doing originals, you kind of get lost. And that's what I, you know, just to kind of backtrack of what I was saying before, like, I kind of moved out here prematurely, and I didn't take advantage of like the whole Canadian law of like 30% and like getting grants from the government to like write albums and do music videos, like go that route. I got a taste of networking out here. I talk to people, I make friends really quickly. You know, I'm talented and I can back it up, and like, you know, and I'm just an honest person. And I think that carries through, and it does well in this city. It's a city full of flakes and a city full of flashy, you know, starlight, but there's goodness in it, and they tend to gravitate toward each other, and they tend to like stick to each other. And I just got hooked on that, right? I was like, oh my God, I found my tribe. Like, this is amazing. And so I don't even remember what I was talking about.
Well, you were saying just like being an artist, being a songwriter, kind of coming.
Oh, being a singer. Like, so just being a vocalist in general, coming out here, I kind of fell out of love with the singer-songwriter thing because it was hard.
Yeah.
And then I started doing session work, and I got into a booth, and then I was like, oh, wait, this is amazing because I can sing everything. When I had label interest, I wrote a bunch of songs, and then I wrote this one song, and it was not in the active rock direction. And it was like, you just wrote this like crazy underground, like, do you want to be Queens of the Stone Age or do you want to be Carrie Underwood? And I'm like, I don't know. I want to be David Bowie. Like, I just want to write. I want to be me. I want to just like write whatever comes out of me and put out an album. And like, why do we have to label it? Because we're a label, you know? And like, kind of like spun my head. And that was so early on here. Like, it was like the first year I was out here. I'm like, I don't know.
The weird thing, and this is what I tell people a lot, it's like the industry is set up for a lot of people that have no talent to make a lot of money. So in order to do that, that's like how they kind of like set up, you know, to control artists. And the ones that end up being the timeless artists are the ones that break free from that. So it's like, you just have to listen to your heart, write from the heart, sing from the heart, and then the rest will kind of like fall into place, because it's easy to get lost in this city. It's easy to get
for
lost
sure.
in
history. And you know what's nice though about, like, for me, people who know me and who my clients who call me, and like, I get paid. Right. And originals don't always pay, but now there's licensing, and like, it's a whole different world. We're not out there with a street team, guerrilla marketing, right. you know, flyering people's cars, and like, have like, you know, you're not doing that anymore. It's like anybody, you can access such a huge, huge fan base and never leave your house.
That's what's crazy. Yes.
Yeah. And so like, it's like shifting my mindset. I'm like old school enough where I used to hit the ground and I used to like get out there with my dedicated friends and family and just like paper the whole entire block, you know? Right. But now you don't even need to do that. And it's great. I'm very practical, you know, I have a full-time job and stuff. And so I have friends like you who's like, hey, on a Thursday, you telling me I'm booked for a gig on a Sunday. And I'm like, all right. Let me build my callus back up and get back on the horse.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like what you need. You need like a like a little push off the diving board. You know what I mean?
Can I say a kick in the ass?
Oh yeah, you can say a kick in the ass. Absolutely. It's like I'm always good for a good kick in the ass. Well, let's play some songs.
Yeah.
What do you want to play first? Your choice.
Let's play 18. No, I don't even think I gave you that. Let's play Blood Red.
All right, here we go. Here's Blood Red by Christine Hanlon.
In broken slumber, in my dreams, I do remember.
Leave, and I pause.
Very nice. Very brooding. I love it. You know what? It's so funny because it's like, I love, like, you know, you played a Pearl Jam song. That's one of my favorite bands of all time. And you listen to a lot of, like, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, all the grunge stuff that I was so heavy into. That was, like, my emo phase when it came to rock music. And I love that you're writing stuff in that style. Tell me, like, some of the influences. I hear a lot of Alice in Chains in that song for some reason.
Yeah, I mean the harmonies for sure. Yeah, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Alice in Chains,
Soundgarden.
Soundgarden. I love Radiohead. I love Kings of the Stone Age. But then I love George Michael. And I love, you know, Mary J. Blige and Mariah Carey and, you know, Whitney Houston, Celine Dion, Sarah McLachlan. Like, kind of, you know, a rainbow of inspiration. Nine Inch Nails. Like, Radiohead is just, like, a huge one for me. I think I mentioned them already, but, you know, and I think like Billie Eilish is rad right now, because I think her and her brother have really honed in originality, and like, she's the type of artist, like, I think they're like the new Radiohead, which is kind of weird to say, and I don't know if Radiohead would like agree with me, but they go somewhere.
Yeah, they go brooding, that brooding emotional place.
You know? Yeah, and it's musical. They know music.
Fun fact: so I was in a professional children's chorus growing up. That's how I got into music. I was in the LA children's chorus.
And you know Phineas.
Yeah, no, Phineas and Billie Eilish were in that group. So that's how they kind of got their break, and they kind of like learned. So I was like one of the youngest members of this chorus and kind of like learned how to like cut our teeth and get gigs and do all that. And then the chorus got established and they just like took it to another level. So it's really interesting because a lot of their early music training is from this chorus. So they work so well together, and they found that synergy, and then they started making records in their bedroom, which they're still doing, but on a much bigger scale. It's just super crazy.
Yeah, I mean, don't they still live at their parents' house in like Highland Park? Like,
I think Billie Eilish just moved out, but I mean, they still go back, and like that's like their powwow. You know what I mean?
So, I love that. And you know, I was waitressing at a hotel restaurant. I was serving as a waitress in a cocktail bar. I was. And her parents were out there, and they were just signing the deal. She was only 14 years old. Wow. They were staying in West Hollywood, and they were just signing the deal for her. So that was pretty cool. It was a long
time. Wait, they told you about this? They told you about like the fact they were doing?
My girlfriend actually was serving their table, and she's like, oh, have you heard this song, Ocean Eyes? And I was like, oh, yeah, kind of. And they're like, yeah, well, I served her parents, and they were and I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, it was that table over there. I'm like, that was her parents. I don't even know who this girl is, but at that point, I think in LA radio it was just circulating Ocean Eyes, and then she just blew up. She did Lollapalooza that year, and she just like exploded.
She like was, a lot of people were like, oh, she's a one, like a overnight success, but she really blew up. Like that first record, I don't know if she'll ever be as big as that first record, even though she's like playing more established like festivals and slots. But that,
I mean, she's got 9 Grammys. She's huge.
Yeah, yeah. And two I love her. 2 Oscars too. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. So that's funny. You talk about Grammys and Oscars. So that song, Blood Red, it's about Lady Gaga. It's about a dream I had about Lady Gaga. And I woke up, and it was the night of a show. I was living in Toronto. I was living in this three-bedroom. It was a two-bedroom apartment, and they converted the balcony. Had no freaking insulation. It was hot as balls that summer. I lived in the balcony. It fit my bed and like barely my dresser and my giant stereo at the time, which had a cassette player and a 6-CD rotator.
I have a tape player in this stereo right here. Just in case, you never know. It's still there.
Yeah. And I woke up and I wrote that song. It took me 5 minutes, but it did. And I played it that night at that gig. And it's my mother's favorite song that I wrote. So it's like, cool. I don't. And it's about a dream I had about Lady Gaga. And
what was the dream?
Very much like the song. So I remember like her eyes were really sad and they were really green, and we were sitting outside like at this table. It was like we were like drinking coffee, kind of like eating, and she had to go and she wanted me to come with her. And then she started like I guess she was being recognized and she was wearing sunglasses. That's right. She was wearing sunglasses and she's like, come with me, like, follow me. And like, I dream about Lady Gaga a lot. I dream about Britney Spears a lot. Okay. So she was running and I'm like chasing her through this corridor. And then like, we were hiding from the paparazzi and then she like came to me and it's really gross. Do you want me to say this?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, okay, then we kissed. You left a stain upon my lips of blood red. Well, that's a PG version. She basically took blood from somewhere.
Wow.
And smeared it across my lips.
Whoa, what a crazy dream. Wow, that's impressive.
And there's, I wrote a song.
There's a music video in there somewhere.
I mean, hey. You want the truth, right? Wake up, Hollywood.
Well played. Well played.
So, and we were around the same. I mean, she's a year younger than me, Lady Gaga, and it was her first album, or right. maybe her second album. But I was obsessed with her, and we were both like 24, 25, right. And I was just like, I became obsessed with her randomly. Like, I like pop. I like a good pop song. Big George Michael fan, but. Something about her originality, she really stood out and she inspired me to write that song.
That's awesome. Well, let's play something else. What are you going to play us next? What's the next one?
Let's play. So when I got signed, the management contract, I think it's a little bit before that, but we were teaming up with a whole bunch of songwriters and stuff. So, we're like writing in like the active rock vein, and I came up with a really cool hook, and then this song was born in a living room. This demo was cut in a living room in Santa Monica on Bundy.
Nice.
Like 12 years ago. And it's called You Think You're Cool, and it's about a dude.
You think I'm cool.
Yeah.
It's about a dude that thinks he's cool.
He thought he was cool. I thought he was pretty cool too. Yeah.
All right. Here's You Think You're Cool by Christine Hamm.
Hey, Christian, why are you always tripping? You say I messed up, but it's you who needs a fixing. Long flight, now you're on a mission. It doesn't feel right when you say it's me you're missing. No. When you say it's me.
Yeah, very aggro. I like it. Very, very cool. Tell me what the influences were for that.
I was dating this dude who's a touring musician, and he'd call me up a lot, tell me some stuff. And I always knew that whatever it was, and he thought I was none the wiser. I don't know. It is what it is. That term he said to me, it is what it is. And I used to hate that. It is what it is. Like, oh man, it boiled my blood. And he's like the first person to ever say that to me. And when he said it to me, like, what are we? It is what it is. And I fucking hated it. And now I say it a lot. Right. And I get it. Because I'm like his age now.
Right.
10 years ago, you know? Like, I'm like, okay, I get it. It is what it is. So, and we're good friends now to this day. We were able to, you know, like, maintain a friendship, and it's just rock and roll, right? But that was the inspiration. It was just like, you know, just a musician dating another musician, no strings, and somebody, I guess, catching a little more feelings than they should and writing a song about it.
That's cool. Well, it's also like, there's something that's so emotional about, like, especially young love. Like, you're just...
It wasn't love. Let's not confuse
it. Let's just call it young emotions. You know what I mean? It's like, when you're just young and, like, you're so excited about having emotions, and then you have feelings, and it gets dramatic because that's part of young emotions. And as you get older, you're like, it is what it is. It should just be a little bit more chill and a little bit less of a hassle.
I mean sometimes you can still catch emotions, right? Yeah. Like, that's what life is about, is love. So, you know, I'm a hopeless romantic on that aspect, and there are some more sad love songs to come, I'm sure, from Christine Hanlon. But I don't know, that song, I have to mention, it was co-written by Rev Theory, the two dudes from Rev Theory, Julian Jorgensen and Matt McCloskey. And then the electric guitar was by Will Ripley. And so Will and Julian are fellow Canadians, and I met them through my manager, Eric, and Matt. I think he's from the Midwest. But anyways, they were great guys. We wrote a handful of songs.
It's got like some Alanis meets like Garbage meets like No Doubt vibes. I mean, I
hear a little bit.
You know, and it's got like a lot of those melodies and kind of like aggro rock.
Yeah.
Rock,
you know? Yeah. I was kind of channeling my like Chris Cornell too, like his whole songbook era. Yeah, totally. You know, like Sunshower and stuff. Like, just singer songwriter. Yeah. But it was on that active rock vein. So it's a little more country. But I think as a folk rock musician at the time, those were the songs I was writing. And then when I was like paired with active rock musicians, it just kind of like turned into this like southern rock vibe, and that's when I was given that.
Well, it's cool, it still maintains like I can hear those influences, but like the high melody, it's like that takes you to a different place, you know what I mean? It's like that's where like I hear like that what's her name from Garbage, Shirley something, I can't remember her.
Shirley Manson,
that's her name, right? Shirley Manson. Yeah, she sings like a lot of melodies, like when she goes to these high outro choruses where it's like that. So I was hearing a little bit of that. Alanis, of course, does a lot of that. No Doubt can do some of that, but they don't do it necessarily like that. But there's definitely those influences I heard a lot. It's very cool.
Thank you. It kind of like always intrigues. I'm intrigued when I hear people
respond
or interpret the influences, because none of those were really going through my mind. Yeah. And I've been compared a lot to Alanis my whole life, and I've kind of like, oh, Canadian.
Oh, no.
You know, like, I'm like, I am, you know, and then like I got into Stevie Nicks a little later in life, and then I'm like, okay, maybe her too, but like I'm so different. I think like I love Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, I just, you know, and Steven Tyler and like Chris Cornell, like the grunge scene, but you don't have control of what comes out of you. I think it just, and maybe there is that. I'm a huge No Doubt fan. You know, it's all I listened to in the 90s.
A melody that's up high, it's very Kate Bush-esque.
Yeah. It's got that.
You hear a lot of that too. You know what I mean? Those elements.
And that was 12 years ago. This song was recorded 12 years ago, what we just heard. And like, fuck, it's been a long time. it's like, wow. So I have different registers to my voice now too, as you heard tonight, and you'll hear in the next song that we play, I performed that the other night live, and it's very different from the 27-year-old chick that was singing that in a living room.
Right.
I was still smoking cigarettes. I was, you know, drinking kind of heavily. I was living, you know, the 20-something-year-old, like, just signed to a management deal in L.A. life.
Well, let's play it. Let's play. This is Keep On Living with Christine Hanlon. That song is so hooky. It's ridiculous. I love it.
Thanks.
I was thinking that when you were playing, I was like, this is so hooky. I love,
thank you.
Love good hooks. Like, I just, doesn't matter what genre, it doesn't matter. It's just like, if it's hooky, it's just, you want
to. I mean, it came to me like that, keep on living, the living runs out, keep on living. And I sang it to my manager and he's like, there's something there. You know? And where I got it from was, you know, if it keeps on raining, levees gonna break.
Yeah,
you know? Zeppelin. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I realized how similar it was. I was like, wait, maybe that's like the subconscious inspiration.
Oh, it sounds different. It sounds different.
And when I was writing that, my mom, so like a little background history, yeah. I only have a couple minutes, but my mom, so I had just moved back to Toronto from my 6 months in LA, and my mom got really sick. She was a heavy smoker, and I was smoking at the time too. And her lungs collapsed, and she was in an induced coma for 4 days to get her vitals back up. And this last day I had a cigarette, this last day she had a cigarette. And that's where the inspiration came from, was like, keep on living till the living runs out, like talking to her. And so that's a demo. It was done in a living room. It's not, I mean, hey, any producers out there who want to help me like produce an actual version of that song, that bridge part, dear mama, can you hear me now? It's like, she's lying in the coma.
Right.
And like, what I would imagine if I were in a coma, because I think you can hear shit, right? Like, I think, I really do. And so I wanted it to be circular, and I wanted it to be like ambient, yeah, and like, yeah, it coming from you from every angle, like her daughter pleading with you, like, wake up, you know, like, I need you. And she woke up, and she's good, and she's here still. And that song's about my mom. And
give me chills. No, really, it's cool. It's a cool story. I love when songs come from something like such a like integral truth source. You know what I mean? Vital truth source, if you may, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful song, beautiful message. Where can people find you if they want to find you online, Christine?
Just search YouTube, Christine. Okay, so I'm Christine Hanlon, but I'm going through a name change. So like Christine Olsen, O-L-S-E-N, or Christine Hanlon. Things will pop up from the past, like prior to when I got married, but now I'm divorced. So like, I'm going back to my maiden name. So Christine Hanlon, but Christine Olsen, O-L-S-E-N. And then on SoundCloud, .com/ Christine Olsen Music. But once again, it says Christine Hanlon as a heading, but if you type in the search in SoundCloud, Christine Hanlon, I come up. I have angel wings. I'm standing in front of that really famous angel painting in Melrose.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wearing like red. It's a hot pink background. That's mine. And it has a bunch of shit. It has like dance music. It has like my commercial stuff I've done. It has like theme work and everything. Some demos and stuff. But I'm Christine Hanlon. So name change in progress. I may even change my name again. I need a stage name. Who wants to give me a stage name?
Some people chime in. You know, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Well, for now, we'll find you as Christine Hanlon. Last time you were a vampire hostess. Now you're a grunge rock enthusiast that's a singer-songwriter. And you'll get to decide what's going to happen next. So we look forward to more music, more songs, more singing, more vocal stylings. More music, Christine Hanlon. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Christine, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.